मन्त्रेषु मां वा उपहुयायत्वम् अकुंठित खंड सदात्म बोधः पृच्छे प्रभो मुग्धैव प्रमत्तः तन्नो मनो मोहयतीव देव। मंत्रेषु इन कंसल्टेशंस माम अंटू मी वाई एज ईदर उपहुय बाय कॉलिंग यत एज मच एज त्वम योर लॉर्डशिप अकुंठितः without hesitation, akhanda, without being separated, sada, eternally, atma, self, bodhah, intelligent, pricche, asked, prabho, O my lord, mugdha, bewildered, eva, as if it were so, apramatah, although never bewildered, Tat, that, na, ar, manaha, mind, mohayati, bewilders, eva, as it is so, deva, O my lord. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Translation, O my lord, your eternal self is never divided by the influence of time, and there is no limitation to your perfect knowledge. Thus, you were sufficiently able to consult with yourself, yet you called upon me for consultation, as if bewildered, although you are never bewildered. And this act of yours bewilders me. Purport. Uddhava was never actually bewildered, but he says that all these contradictions appear to be bewildering. The whole discussion between Krishna and Uddhava was meant for the benefit of Maitreya, who was sitting nearby. The Lord used to call Uddhava for consultation when the city was attacked by Jarasandha and others, and when he executed great sacrifices as part of his routine royal work as Lord of Dwarka. The Lord has no past, present and future because he is unhampered by the influence of eternal time, and thus nothing is hidden from him. He is eternally self-intelligent. Therefore his calling for Uddhava to give him enlightenment is certainly astonishing. All these actions of the Lord appear to be contradictory, although there is no contradiction in the routine activities of the Lord. Therefore, it is better to see them as they are and not attempt to explain them. Om Agyanatimirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadahamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Girim Yat Kripatamaham Vande Shri Guru Dinatarinam Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindubhyayivacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So we are seeing here that the conversation between the conversation is continuing between Vidura and Uddhava. We know that Vidura was traveling on a pilgrimage because he did not want to participate in the war, and he was driven out of the kingdom by Duryodhana. He was insulted, and we've heard from many speakers in the past that how he utilized this opportunity of not participating in the war to actually go and increase his spiritual realizations and to advance in spiritual life. So Vidura has gone on a pilgrimage, and he has met Uddhava on the banks of the Yamuna. And this conversation has been going on since the last two chapters between Vidura and Uddhava, where Uddhava is narrating Krishna's pastimes. And now we can see that Uddhava has started speaking. So actually now Uddhava is narrating what happened to Vidura when he met Lord Krishna, before Lord Krishna left the planet. So he was describing the disappearance pastimes of the Lord to Vidura, and Uddhava becomes greatly aggrieved. And while narrating that, actually it is described how Uddhava was experiencing transcendental ecstasies, how his hair was standing on end and how tears were flowing from his eyes. And in that ecstasy, he is describing all these pastimes to Vidura, who is another great devotee of the Lord, who was also feeling the same separation which Uddhava was feeling from the Lord. So Uddhava is describing that how just before the Lord was leaving, he went to see the Lord. He came to know that the Lord is going to wind up his earthly pastimes. And therefore he goes to see the Lord, who was sitting under the a young banyan tree and who was deep in meditation. And that time Uddhava went to have final consultation, like final counsel with the Lord. And Uddhava is describing at that time Maitreya Muni also came over there. By arrangement of providence, Uddhava says that Maitreya Muni somehow happened to pass by there, and he also sat down to hear the conversation which would happen between Uddhava and Lord Krishna. Because obviously it is always said that when a person is about to leave the world, there are very good realizations and very good instructions which that person gives. And Maitreya Muni also wanted to hear of these instructions which were going to be imparted by Krishna to Uddhava. So Uddhava described the setting, how Krishna was sitting and then how he sat down in front of Krishna. And he said that the Lord spoke to him sweetly, and now Uddhava is addressing the Lord before the Lord would give him further instructions. So as part of the prayers which Uddhava is offering to the Lord, in today's verse, Uddhava is describing the bewildering nature of the Lord. So, you know, we know the background of Uddhava, that Uddhava is actually a cousin brother of Lord Krishna. Just as Arjuna was a cousin brother of Lord Krishna, so Arjuna was Krishna's father, Vasudev's sister's son, Kunti's son, who was Kunti was the sister of Vasudev, and Uddhava was Vasudev's brother's son. So this is what was the relationship between Krishna and Uddhava. So they were cousins, and it is said that Uddhava had very similar features to Krishna. He had almost the same complexion, very similar features. He used to dress in clothes which Krishna used to give him. Always maha clothes of Krishna he used to wear. So Uddhava used to look in like in his features and everything. His appearance was very much like Lord Krishna. And he was a great friend of Lord Krishna in the mood of servant. So the name of Uddhava is also mentioned in Nectar of Devotion. When, you know, the highest servitude is spoken of, Uddhava's name is mentioned in the Nectar of Devotion. And there it is described that his servitude was taking such heights of ecstasy that he was actually a mixture of servitude and friendship with Krishna, Sakhyaras and Dasyaras with Krishna. So that was the glory of Uddhava. And one more glory of Uddhava was that he was continuously with Krishna after Krishna killed Kamsa and went to Dwarka. He was continuously in Krishna's presence. It is described they used to sit together, eat together, sleep together sometimes. They used to, like, you know, utna baitna in Hindi we say. Uddhava was constantly at Krishna's side. He never used to like to leave Krishna's association even for a moment. So in that matter, Uddhava was a very, very confidential associate of the Lord. And he knew the Lord's mood very well. And he had imbibed and he had learned so much from the Lord by being constantly with the Lord. And therefore he was the right person to narrate all these pastimes about Lord Krishna to Vidura. So over here he is describing that as part of his services to the Lord used to consult Uddhava. And we read this in the Krishna book also, that whenever any important decision had to be taken, as the prince of Dwarka, Krishna was the prince of Dwarka, and whenever any important decision had to be taken, like if some big sacrifice had to be performed, or any kingdom had to be acquired, or any king had to be attacked, or any political strategy had to be formed, Krishna would always consult Uddhava. Just as we know in the Mahabharata, Dhritarashtra always used to consult Vidura. Vidura used to always give very good counsel to Dhritarashtra. And although, you know, Dhritarashtra we know was materially blind, but he was spiritually also blind. So he was not taking the good counsel of Vidura very seriously many times, especially when it was in regard to his own son Duryodhana. But always Dhritarashtra used to consult Vidura. Whenever any distressful situation especially used to come up, like he knew, you know, after the gambling match everything had been lost, what should be done. All these consultations he used to ask Vidura to come and give him advice. So in the same way Krishna used to consult Uddhava. And Uddhava is expressing over here that the Lord is eternal time. He knows past, present, future. He is omniscient. And he is actually Swarat and Abhigya. He is all-knowing and he is completely independent. He does not need to depend on anybody's advice, or he does not need actually anybody's counsel. But yet, Krishna chose Uddhava to take counsel from. And Uddhava is saying that these actions of Krishna are quite bewildering to my mind. So obviously Uddhava is speaking in his humility. Uddhava is no less qualified. In fact, he had studied under Brihaspati. So Uddhava was a scholar, he was a learned scholar, and he was obviously an intimate associate. So he was a pure devotee of the Lord. But yet he is feeling that the Lord need not have taken any counsel from me. And why the Lord chose to take counsel from me is really bewildering to me. Because who am I to give counsel to the Lord? When the Lord is all-knowing. When the Lord is past, present, future. He knows what's going to happen in the future. In fact, he has only destined the future to happen. And yet he is asking me as if he is ignorant of the future. And he is asking me, what should I do in this situation? And this situation or this characteristic of Krishna is found to be quite bewildering by Uddhava. And if we go back to the first canto, where we go back to the prayers of Queen Kunti. Now we know that the Mahabharata war was over, the entire Kurukshetra war was over, and Krishna was actually leaving Hastinapur to go back to Dwarka after the war was over and after the Pandavas had been installed on the throne. So he had done his duty and he wanted to go back to Dwarka to obviously to attend to his state's affairs and to be with his family. And at that time Kunti Maharani comes out. And she's Krishna's aunt actually, but she's feeling so much separation from Krishna. Because Kunti Maharani, Pandavas, they are all pure devotees of the Lord. So they had association of the Lord for so many months when the war was taking place. And now suddenly they are realizing that they are going to be bereft of the Lord's association. So Kunti Maharani comes and she stops Krishna's chariot which was about to roll. And she offers beautiful prayers to Lord Krishna. In fact, there is a booklet only, Prayers by Queen Kunti, which is, you know, Prabhupada has given very beautiful purports to the prayers of Queen Kunti. And in one of the prayers, Kunti also says the same thing which Uddhava is saying over here. She is also saying that, oh Lord Krishna, your actions are quite bewildering. And she says that although fear personified is afraid of you, and people know, like we know that you are death personified, you come and take people's lives away. And fear personified, which strikes fear in people's heart, but that fear personified cannot do anything in front of you. And yet it is so bewildering for me to know that you were shivering in fright when you had committed a small mistake and when Mother Yashoda was running behind you. So it was an appropriate month because this pastime had happened during this month only, the Damodar Leela pastime which is going on right now, the Kartik month which is going on right now. And Kunti Maharani is describing that pastime. And she is saying that it is so bewildering for me to understand that there were tears flowing from your eyes out of fright. You were so afraid of Mother Yashoda's chastisement. And actually your pure pearl necklace was shaking and your chest was heaving up and down because you were sobbing. And you were scared that Mother Yashoda is going to tie you up or Mother Yashoda is going to beat you. And this sight is so bewildering for us, O Lord. Because we know that fear personified is afraid of you. And Kunti had herself seen what Krishna had done in the entire Kurukshetra war, how all the enemies had been completely annihilated by Krishna's will. So Kunti Maharani knew that the Lord, this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and yet he is acting in such a bewildering way. So all these contradictions are there in Lord Krishna's character if we see. But these contradictions if we see can be completely adjusted or can be completely understood when we understand the loving nature of the Lord. Now Krishna is known as Bhakta Vatsala. He is completely sold out to his devotees. He is completely under the control of his devotees. In fact, that is why it is said that Krishna Bhakti is very difficult to achieve. In the Nectar of Devotion, one of the characteristics is that it is very difficult to achieve. Because Krishna can give you material benefits, he can give you liberation, whatever you want, Krishna will give. But bhakti is very difficult to get. Because once a devotee gets pure bhakti for the Lord in his heart, Krishna gets purchased by the devotee. Krishna comes under the control of that devotee. And therefore Krishna doesn't give that bhakti very easily to everybody. So whatever contradictory actions we see of the Lord can be actually reconciled by understanding the fact that these are all activities of the Lord, or these characteristics of the Lord actually sprout from that main quality of the Lord, that he is Bhakta Vatsala. He loves his devotees so much that he is ready to undergo or he is ready to do any contradictory activities. So we know he is, you know, pure personified, is afraid of him, but yet in front of Mother Yashoda he is ready to cry in fear. And it is not that he is putting up that show just for Mother Yashoda's benefit or just to show Mother Yashoda that he is actually scared. No, no, he was not showing. Completely under the influence of Yog Maya, Krishna was actually scared. It was not a show he was putting up, or it was not just, you know, oh, I'm, you know, fear personified is afraid of me, what you can do, you're just a woman. No, he was actually scared, oh, this is my mother, she's going to chastise me now, or she's going to tie me up now. So this fear was actually there in the Lord's heart. So in the same way, when Lord Krishna is consulting Uddhava, he's actually consulting, he actually wants that counsel from Uddhava. He feels that Uddhava is so learned and Uddhava is so wise, and he can actually give me good counsel. And this is because the Lord is Bhaktavatsala. He is reciprocating with his devotees. So he is reciprocating with Uddhava's desire to serve him. And he knows the best way for Uddhava to serve him would be to take counsel from him. Or the best way for Mother Yashoda to serve him would be to allow those motherly feelings, which includes chastising your child also, to come out in Mother Yashoda. And we also see the apparent contradiction in Krishna's behavior when we see that we know the six characteristics which make the Lord, Bhogeshwarya Samagrasya, that all his six opulences, if we know. So one of the opulences is that he is completely renounced. Completely renounced. He is not at all attached to anything. So we know this characteristic of the Lord, but we also know that the Lord was completely attached to the gopis. In fact, it is mentioned that the Lord was sold out to the gopis. And we know from, you know, we've read so many pastimes in the Krishna book how the gopis, Radharani and all the gopis, used to sometimes chastise Lord Krishna. They used to call him a black cheat or a black thief, that black boy who's a thief. They used to chastise him with so many words. But Krishna was completely sold out to the gopis' love. On one hand, we know that he is completely renounced. On one hand, we see that he is so much attached to the gopis' love. And we also study his pastimes in Dwarka. He married 16,108 princesses. So if we are talking about Lord Krishna to someone, and this is an aspect which is very, very bewildering to non-devotees. If you talk about Krishna like, you know, he is the Lord and he is completely renounced. And then when they hear of these pastimes of Krishna doing Rasleela with the gopis, or Krishna marrying 16,108 wives, then it bewilders the minds of people, thinking that how can this Lord be so renounced when he was doing Ras Leela, dancing in the middle of the night with girls, or when he had so many wives. How can we consider your Lord as renounced? And this is one thing which really people, you know, start with, people who don't have faith or who don't hear from the right sources and who don't obtain the right understanding. Such people actually become bewildered and they leave this, you know, they leave the bhakti of Krishna and they go away because they feel that Krishna was doing immoral activities. And these activities do not befit a God. How can he be God if he is doing such activities? This is the logic which people use. But it is explained, again in the first canto of the Bhagavatam, it is explained that after Lord Krishna left Hastinapur and he comes back to Dwarka to be with all of his wives, there it is explained that Krishna was actually like a henpecked husband. He is actually called henpecked. And wives get very happy when they hear that. They can tell their husbands that Krishna himself was henpecked. What is the meaning of henpecked? Henpecked means completely going behind their wives and being at the wife's command. Whatever the wife says, the husband will do like that. That is the meaning of the word henpecked. So Krishna was completely at his wife's command. It is mentioned that in each of the palaces, 16,108 palaces, Krishna used to expand himself in those many forms, and he used to go behind his wives as they used to move around in the chambers of the palaces. So that way he was so attached to his wives. But also it is explained in the first canto that, you know, the obviously all these 16,108 wives are eternal associates of the Lord. And they were the most beautiful women on earth. So they are the Lord's eternal associates. They are the Lord's eternal wives. So obviously we can imagine their beauty. So they were the most beautiful ladies on earth. And yet, even when they used to move their eyebrows, you know, expressing their conjugal love, it is said that they were unable to arouse Krishna's senses. So again we see this is an apparent contradiction. Krishna is a henpecked husband, Prabhupada mentions, and Bhagavata mentions in one place. And in another verse it is mentioned that even the moving eyebrows of these beautiful women could not arouse Krishna's senses or Krishna's lust at all. So again, this is an apparent contradiction. But this contradiction gets reconciled that Krishna will act, these wives, these 16,108 princesses had the desire to obtain Krishna as their husband. And they were pure devotees. So Krishna is reciprocating with their desires by accepting them as his wives. But on the other hand, he is absolutely detached still. They cannot arouse his senses or they cannot arouse lust in Krishna because that relationship is also pure and plus Krishna is completely detached. So in that way we see this thing is reconciled, this apparent contradiction. And there's a very nice pastime which is there in the Gopal Tapani Upanishad. So in that it is mentioned that Krishna was with the gopis in that pastime. And the gopis approach Krishna and they tell him that we want to actually feed a very nice brahmana. So whom should we go and approach and whom should we feed? We want to cook nice prasad and we want to feed a brahmana and we want to get blessings from that brahmana. So Krishna says that you should feed Durvasa Muni who is living on the other side of the Yamuna. And the gopis said the Yamuna was quite risen at that time because of rain. So the gopis asked Krishna, but how will we cross the Yamuna? Right now it is an obstacle for us to go and approach Durvasa Muni and serve him. And Krishna says that you go and tell Yamuna that if Krishna is a perfect and faultless brahmachari, you please give us way so that we can cross the Yamuna and we can go and serve Durvasa Muni. And the gopis, they were very simple, innocent cowherd girls and they had pure love for Krishna. So they immediately had faith in Krishna's words and they went to the Yamuna, the bank of the Yamuna. And they prayed to Yamuna. They said, oh Yamuna, if Krishna is a completely faultless brahmachari, please give us way. And immediately the Yamuna parted way. And they went and they crossed and they went towards the other side, carrying lots of foodstuffs with them for serving Durvasa Muni. And on the other side, they went to Durvasa Muni's ashram. And they went and gave all the foodstuffs to Durvasa Muni. And Durvasa Muni ate sumptuously. Whatever it is said, I think 56 items they prepared for Durvasa Muni. And everything Durvasa Muni ate. And the gopis were also astonished that, oh, this Muni has eaten so much. But they were very happy that they could serve Durvasa Muni in this way. And Durvasa Muni blessed them profusely for their service. And then the gopis tell Durvasa Muni that we need to now go back on the other side of the river to our homes. So how do we cross this Yamuna? And Durvasa Muni asked, how did you come in the first place on this side? So they explained to him what Krishna had asked them to say to Yamuna. And then Durvasa Muni says that, okay, now you go to the bank of the Yamuna and say that if Durvasa Muni is fasting completely and he only drinks the juice of Durva grass, then, oh Yamuna, you please give way and allow us to cross. And the gopis were astonished because Durvasa Muni had just eaten such a big meal. But still, they went to the bank of the Yamuna and they prayed to Yamuna. They said, oh Yamuna, if Durvasa Muni fasts nicely, he completely fasts and he survives only by drinking the juice of Durva grass, please give us way. And immediately the Yamuna parted and they were able to cross over. And then they go to Krishna and they tell him, because they realize that this is a contradiction. So they tell Krishna that, Krishna, you are always in association of all of us gopi, like all of us cowherd girls. You are always around us performing grass leelas with us. And then you are asking us to tell Yamuna that I'm a perfect brahmachari. And actually Yamuna gave way. If you are a perfect brahmachari, she should give way. And she actually gave way. How is this possible? And on the other hand, when we were crossing from the other side, we just fed Durvasa Muni so many foodstuffs. 56 items we had cooked and he ate everything in front of us. And after that, he is telling us to tell Yamuna that if I fast completely and I only survive on Durva grass juice, please give me way. And they tell Krishna that Yamuna actually gave way. So how do we understand this contradiction? That Durvasa Muni ate so much in front of us and yet he is saying if I fasted, the Yamuna should go give way. So then Krishna explains to them. Krishna explains like what philosophy we have understood from the Bhagavatam. Krishna explains the same thing to them. That although I am in the association of all the gopis, my senses are absolutely not aroused. And it is not, Krishna explains to that it is not, this is not lust which is on the material platform. The love which I share with you all is mainly for the reciprocation of your feelings for me. Because the gopis are in Madhurya Ras and they have those feelings for Krishna. So Krishna is just reciprocating with their feelings. But again, some of the acharyas explained that absolutely there was no discharge of semen or it was not any illicit activities which we see in the material world. And therefore Krishna is still considered a completely faultless brahmachari. Because there was absolutely no discharge of semen or there was no lust on the material platform between in Krishna's heart for the gopis. And in the same way he explains Durvasa Muni's contradictory action. He says that Durvasa Muni is a great devotee, and therefore when you gave him all those foodstuffs, he was mainly reciprocating again with your desire to serve him. He knew that all of you wanted to feed a Brahmana nicely and get blessings and get the spiritual credits of serving a Brahmana. So he was actually allowing himself to be fed just because he wanted to satisfy your desires. But on Durvasa Muni's part, internally, because he's a yogi, he internally actually gave all that foodstuff was offered to him by him to the super soul. So he actually did not partake of anything. Everything was partaken according to Durvasa Muni by the super soul, by the Lord. And he was still completely fasting. And therefore even that contradiction is reconciled, because he did not eat anything. He was actually, it seemed as if his body was taking in everything, but he was actually passing it on to the super soul or to the Lord. And therefore he was still considered to be fasting and still considered to be surviving only on Durva grass juice. And therefore that contradiction is also reconciled over there. So we see that when we hear about, and when Uddhava is also talking, that my Lord, your contradictory actions are quite bewildering to us. It is very important that we understand from the purports of Prabhupada and from Acharyas how to reconcile these contradictions in the Lord's behavior, so that we as devotees don't get bewildered, and we as devotees don't commit the mistake of sometimes, you know, misunderstanding Krishna's actions, and then, you know, lowering our reverence or awe for the Lord in our eyes. So it's very important that these activities of Krishna are understood properly in the proper context by reading and hearing from Acharyas. And there are also, not only in Krishna we see all these contradictory actions, but we also sometimes see all these contradictory actions in his devotees. And today we will discuss about the life of one such devotee, in whose life and whose life the activities of that devotee sometimes were very contradictory to the normal codes of material life which normal people live. And that devotee whose disappearance day is today is Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj, who was the spiritual master of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who is the spiritual master of our Srila Prabhupada. So we will spend some time on discussing about the activities of Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj also. So it is said in the scriptures that there are two types of saints, or there are two types of devotees. So one type of devotees are known as the Bhajanandi devotees, and the other types of devotees are known as the Goshtianandi devotees. So Goshtianandi devotees are those who actually are on the highest Uttama Adhikari platform, but they step down from that platform and they come to the Madhyama Adhikari platform because they want to preach. So impelled by compassion for others in their heart, they actually step down from the Uttama Adhikari platform, because they feel for the suffering of the others and they want to alleviate the suffering of all these conditioned souls. And therefore they take to preaching, stepping down from that platform. And one such example is our own Srila Prabhupada. We know he was very peacefully living in Radha Damodar temple in Vrindavan. He was doing his own bhajan. And definitely he would have gone back to Godhead from that place, from such a place where he was intensely doing his own sadhana. But still Srila Prabhupada came down to the platform of Madhyamadhikari because he had instructions from his Guru Maharaj to preach. And Prabhupada himself had so much compassion in his heart for all the fallen conditioned souls. So he actually wanted to preach and he came down to the platform of Madhyamadhikari. And the other type of saints are Bhajanandi saints. Now Bhajanandi saints usually do not come down from that platform on which they are situated of continuous spontaneous devotion for the Lord. So they do not usually come down to that platform, and they do not mix with the material world, the people in the material world, for the purpose of preaching. They usually do not do that. And it is said that sometimes, you know, we may think that, oh, they don't have compassion in their heart for the fallen conditioned souls. Don't they want to deliver these souls? But it is said that no, it is not that they are lacking in compassion for the fallen people of the world, but it is just that this action of theirs is actually inspired by the Lord to stay on the Bhajanandi platform. That is one thing. There is inspiration from within, given by the Lord. But also these devotees who are on that platform, Uttama Adhikari platform, have an intense humility inside them. And they completely feel themselves worthless. They don't feel they will be able to deliver anybody. And they don't even feel that people are fallen, such that they need to be delivered and they need to be preached to. So that intense humility does not make them step down from that platform, because they absolutely feel themselves lacking in that ability to go and actually transform someone's heart because they feel they are all already such advanced people. Because they are Pandita Samadarshina, they do not see any difference. They cannot discriminate. Like, you know, Madhyamadhikari has to discriminate between neophytes, advanced peers, all that. But an Uttamadhikari cannot discriminate. And therefore, he is not able to step down from that platform. And also, because the Uttamadhikari is placed, situated on that platform, he is not able to transform the highly advanced, you know, his thoughts and his mind is situated on that platform. So sometimes such devotees are not able to transform their thoughts into intelligible words which people can understand. And therefore they are unable to preach. They are unable to convey the message of Krishna to others because their thoughts do not transform into words which will be understood by others. So these are the two types of divisions which are mentioned in the Shastras about Bhajan Anandi saints and Goshti Anandi saints. So one such devotee with whom we are discussing, we just started discussing about Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, he was actually a Bhajan Anandi saint. So he was on that platform of spontaneous continuous devotion for Krishna. He was on the Kraganuga platform for Lord Krishna. And outwardly he actually appeared to be illiterate. Like he had absolutely not studied, no formal education Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj had taken. And also he was blind. Later on in his life he became completely blind. And yet scholars of that time used to come and sit at his lotus feet and try to understand the imports of spiritual esoteric topics from him. So that was the scholarship, that was the realization which Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj had, although he had formally not taken any education in the Vedas or any material education, and plus he was blind, he could not see, and yet he was advising, like he was giving instructions to whoever were, you know, approaching him for all these realizations. In fact, it is mentioned that Bhakti Vinod Thakur considered Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj as his very good friend. Now actually Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj had taken initiation from a devotee called Bhagwat Das Babaji Maharaj, who was one of the foremost disciples of Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj. And we know Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj is the guru of Bhakti Vinod Thakur. So in that way, Bhakti Vinod Thakur was actually the god brother of Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj's guru. So he had to be revered as such, and actually Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj used to rever Bhakti Vinod Thakur so much. But Bhakti Vinod Thakur used to consider Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj as his friend. He had so much of reverence for Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj's abilities. So Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj's behavior was actually contradictory to normal terms. He was highly intolerant of deception, crookedness, and any form of hypocrisy which people used to show. This was one of the main quality of Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj. Highly intolerant. He could not tolerate any hypocrisy in any person. He could not tolerate any crookedness or deceit if any person showed. And he could not tolerate all these qualities if they were present in any person who approached him. And absolutely cutting during those times if he sensed these qualities inside those people. And one more characteristic of Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj was that he was highly renounced. Extremely austere in his behavior and in his qualities. And therefore, if we know his pranam mantra, it says Namo Gaura Kishoraya Sakshat Vairagya Murtaye. Sakshat Vairagya Murtaye means he was actually the emblem of renunciation. That much austere Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj was. So when we hear about his glories, or when we try to narrate the glories of Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, because he had all these qualities, we pray to him during our narration and during our hearing of his glories, that we get a little bit of his mercy. And we get some particles of freedom, like we get his mercy so that we can become free from deceit, from crookedness, from hypocrisy which might be there in our hearts. And which are the traits which in Krishna book also Bakasura demon represented, which Krishna killed. So we pray to Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj on this most auspicious day of his disappearance, that we may get freedom from all these anarthas which might be there in our heart also. And for which Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj had absolute intolerance. And we also pray that we get that purity and that determination to do some austerity for the pleasure of Lord Krishna, like Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj used to do. So Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj appeared in this world in the 1830s. And at that time it was called as East Bengal or present day Bangladesh. That is where Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj appeared. Initially he was a householder. So in those early days, in the earlier centuries, people used to get married at very young age. So even Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj was married off when he was just a boy. And for it is mentioned that for 20 years he lived as a householder. And he was surviving in his household life by being a broker for grains. So he used to trade in grains, that was his business. And for 20 years he was with his wife, and as soon as his wife left the world, Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj completely renounced the world. So that means he was a devotee from the beginning of his life. It was not that when he was a householder he was under illusion or he was completely caught up in household life. No, he was practicing devotional service very nicely. And as soon as his wife left, he renounced. He immediately went to Vrindavan and he took Babaji initiation from Bhagwat Das Babaji, who was, as I mentioned earlier, who was a disciple of Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj. And that way, you know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was his guru's god brother. So in, for 30 years, it is mentioned Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj lived in Vrindavan, and actually he lived like a renunciate, like a Babaji. He used to live under different trees every day and completely renounced living only on Madhukari. And then in 1897, it is mentioned that after Bhaktivinoda Thakur discovered the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya, the Yogapith was discovered with the help of Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj. So Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj came to know of this in Vrindavan. And then he travelled to Nadia. And he then made Navadvipa as his residence for the rest of his life till he disappeared from the world. So in 1897, he moved to Navadvip as soon as Lord Chaitanya's birthplace was discovered. And even in Navadvip, he continued his same renounced activities. He used to just survive by doing Madhukari. So he used to go and beg dry foodstuffs from people, and then he would take up earthen pots which had been discarded by householders in Navadvip. So whenever there used to be eclipses or some inauspicious things, householders used to discard their earthen pots. So Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj used to collect these earthen pots which were discarded by householders. He would wash them and collect some dry wood from the forest, and then he would cook whatever dry ingredients he had taken from these householders by doing Madhukari. And after cooking that, he would offer it to the Lord, and then he would partake of the remnants. So this is what is mentioned about his renunciation, that he used to only use things which were considered to be absolutely valueless by householders and which were completely rejected by normal people. Even for his clothing, it is mentioned that he used to go to the banks of the Ganga in Navadvip, and you know, whenever people leave their bodies would be burnt on the bank of the Ganga. So he would go and he would take up the discarded cloths which had been left before burning the corpse. And this cloth he used to wash in the Ganga water, and he used to wear only that cloth which had been discarded even by dead bodies. So that is how Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj's renunciation was. So he had absolutely no possessions. His only possessions were his kanti mala, his neck beads which were made of tulsi, and his japa beads which were made of tulsi. And he had a few books of Narottam Das Thakur. He had so much reverence for Narottam Das Thakur that he used to carry two of his books with him. One was Prarthana and one was Prema Bhakti Chandrika. So these were the only two books he used to carry. And sometimes he would wear these clothes which he used to take from dead bodies, or sometimes he would completely roam naked in Navadvip. That is how Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj was renounced. Plus he had one more very strong quality, was that he would never ever allow anybody to serve him. Never he would take any service from anyone. In fact, when Bhaktivinoda Thakur saw that how austere life Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj used to live, it is mentioned that sometimes he would not even cook whatever dry ingredients he would get from householders. He would just eat that, or he would just put the dry rice in water for some time and then drink that water along with the rice. Or sometimes he would not even bother to do Madhukari. He would just collect some mud, some earth from the banks of the Ganga, and he would just eat that mud up. He used to actually get angry when his, you know, stomach used to rumble with hunger sometimes, because obviously if you're in the material world, the body is going to have some demands. So he used to get angry with his stomach and he used to just stuff some earth from the bank of the Ganga so that the stomach will learn a lesson, he used to say, and it wouldn't again demand some food. So that was how his renunciation was. And when Bhaktivinoda Thakur saw that Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj was living a life like this, and also his eyes had started failing, so Bhaktivinoda Thakur actually wanted Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur to serve Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj. So he requested Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj that we will take you to a very good doctor in Calcutta, where he will, you know, treat your eyes, and plus Bhaktivinoda Thakur prescribed a good diet, and he had someone cook the diet for Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj. But absolutely Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj refused to accept that service. In fact, he told Bhakti Vinod Thakur, because he had so much regard for Bhakti Vinod Thakur and Bhakti Siddhanta Maharaj. He said that it is better I drown in the Ganga rather than accepting service from Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So he did not even go to the doctor, nor did he change his diet. And because of that, it is mentioned that I think in around a few years later, in 1907 or something, he completely lost his eyesight. He became fully blind. So that is how Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj was. And very rigid in his vows. It is said that when Ekadashi used to come, he absolutely refused to even accept water. Even no water he would take, only have sometimes cracked rice which was soaked in water and sometimes earth. That is what was his diet throughout. So renounced he was that once a landowner came, and that landowner was owning a nice dharmashala in Navadvip. And that landowner came with his wife, and he requested Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj that I would like to make a small room for you in my dharmashala. You please come and reside there, because Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj, although he wasn't a Goshti Anandi saint, he wasn't actively preaching, but yet his fame, his glories had spread all over Navadvip, because his whole character or his whole life was a personal life was an example for everyone. And his fame had spread, and therefore people used to want to come and serve him. So this landowner came with his wife, and he offered a room that you please accept this room and come and live in, because you are sometimes living under some tree, or sometimes he used to live in a small bhajan kutir in Bhakti Vinod Thakur's house, which was Swananda Sukhada Kuj. And sometimes, but hardly he used to live there, sometimes he would just live under a roof which was leaking. So this landowner and his wife wanted to serve him. But Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj, as we mentioned earlier, could not accept service from anyone. And plus he was so austere. So he said, no, I don't want any room in your dharmashala. But they kept insisting. So he said, okay, if you want to give me something, please give me space inside your public latrine, the toilet which is there inside your dharmashala. He said, I want to go inside that toilet and I want to chant, because when I'm chanting anywhere, even under a tree or in some bhajan kutir, there are so many people who keep coming to me. You know, when people know there is a sadhu, then everybody wants blessings. So they keep coming to me for blessings, or they keep coming and disturbing my bhajan. And many of them are completely insincere, coming for material benedictions. So I want to stay away from these people, and therefore please allow me to chant in your toilet. And this landowner and his wife were shocked. They said, no, it will be a big offense. It will be a sin on our part if we, you know, give a toilet in our ashram to you. But Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj insisted. And then they complied. They said, okay, we will give you. So they got their toilet renovated for Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj. They got it completely cleaned. And then they gave space inside the toilet. And they said that even though you are accepting this toilet, we will give you two rooms next to it. So anytime you want to go out of the toilet, these two rooms are there. Or anybody who wants to come and serve you, they can stay in these two rooms. So we are going to make these two rooms available for you. And that way Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj moved actually into that toilet, and he started chanting earnestly. And that toilet had only enough space that one person could sit and chant. And he was very peaceful over there. So he used to nicely sit and chant over there. And through this pastime, actually Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj was trying to show that associating with material people or having worldly desires are actually more foul smelling than stool in the toilet. And that is what he wanted to show, that better to stay where stool is passed rather than actually hearing of those, having those material desires in our heart, or actually associating with people who come to you seeking material desires or blessings for fulfillment of their material desires. And then when Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj moved into the toilet, there was a man called Madhu. He also wanted to sort of imitate Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj. So his intentions were completely insincere. And he moved into the room which this landowner had kept available next to the toilet. And there he also started loudly chanting in imitation of Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj. And he used to chant, and then Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj was completely blind. But still he came to know that there is someone who has moved into the room next. So he called out loudly and he said, who are you? And what are you chanting over there in that room? You are sitting solitary in the confinement of four walls, and you are thinking you are chanting, but I know what you are contemplating on. So while chanting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, you are actually contemplating on name, fame, prestige and women. That is what you are desiring. And therefore, for people like you, it is better to chant in the association of devotees and not in a solitary confinement of a room. And there was such a powerful lesson which Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj was speaking for all devotees who are practicing Krishna consciousness. So important to chant in the association of devotees so that devotees can inspire each other to be in check rather than doing, you know, I'll do nirjan bhajan, I'll chant my rounds alone like that. So he was trying to tell this Madhu, this man, imposter who had come into the next room. And now he is revealing Madhu's secrets. So Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj is blind. But he is telling Madhu that I know what you have been doing. Any food and money that has been left for me by devotees outside the toilet, I know you have been taking them. You have been eating that food and you have been using that money after, you know, to go to the district of Nadia and to associate in illicit activities with women. That is what you have been doing. I know it. And what happened was after some days, Madhu actually contracted a disease. And that disease became so bad that his friends had to actually take him away from there, back to his home. So in that way, Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj got rid of that association, that undesirable association which he didn't have. And it is mentioned that this was the this disease which this Madhu got was actually a reaction of to the offense he committed of even imitating a Vaishnava. So even imitating a great Vaishnava is actually an offense, and we can get reactions of trying to imitate a great Vaishnava. So that is a lesson. And then we know one of his characteristics was absolutely he was intolerant of hypocrisy. So there is a pastime of an Orison man. His name was Damodar Das. And he had moved in with Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj, and he said that I really want to serve you. I've heard of your fame and I know you are such a renowned sadhu. So please allow me to render some service to you. And Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj allowed that man to stay with him. And that man was allowed to sometimes cook also for Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj. He used to have only rice, so he was allowed to boil the rice for Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj. And in that way, he was allowed to serve. And then whatever money, because people used to come and give so many things to Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj. So whatever money, everything used to come, this man used to keep it safe. But one problem was there. This Damodar Das, he had a father-in-law who was actually a reciter of a professional reciter of Bhagavatam. So what this father-in-law used to do, he used to go around reciting Bhagavatam, but that was like Prabhupada mentions in the so many of his purports. He was only doing it to fill his belly. Prabhupada says that people who professionally recite Bhagavatam to earn a livelihood, the hearer also doesn't get any benefit and the speaker also doesn't get any benefit because the motive is to earn a livelihood out of Bhagavatam. So that is what the father-in-law used to do, and Damodar Das, what he did was he used to siphon off some of the money which was given for Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj and he used to give it to his father-in-law. And Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj came to know of this activity. So it is mentioned also in the scriptures that Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj was in touch with the super soul. Otherwise how he would come to know of these activities which were being done behind his back when he was even blind. But he came to know of this activity of this Damodar Das, this Orison man. And he became so angry. And he became disturbed and he stopped accepting food that Damodar Das was cooking. And even the other devotees, the disciples of Gaur Kishordas, the other devotees, he didn't have any other disciples, but the other devotees who were around Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj, they all became disturbed. And they realized that something is wrong. And Damodar Das actually became very terrified. He understood that Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj has come to know that I was siphoning off some of his money. So what Damodar Das did was he started fasting completely from food and water. Because he was terrified that Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj, there might be some reaction that may come. But it did not have any effect on Gaur Kishordas Babaji. Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj said that please take this hypocritical man away from here. And if he doesn't go away from here, I'm going to go and drown in the Ganga. So he kept saying that and then that man started fasting. So Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj actually went to the Ganga and drowned himself. And people went to rescue him. And he said, no, don't try to rescue me. Don't try to revive me. I don't want to be rescued because I don't want to stay with this man. See what he has done. He has taken away everything that was being given to me. And he has been giving his father-in-law. So the people who were trying to rescue him thought that, oh, Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj is so much attached to whatever money was given to him. And they said, don't worry. We will replace 4 times more money than what you've lost. But please allow us to rescue you and you please come out of the Ganga. And then he allowed himself to be brought out of the Ganga. And then when those people who saved him tried to give him the money, he said, no, I'm actually, I don't want any of the money. I am not attached to this money at all. So he did not accept the money. He said, but I don't want this hypocrisy, this hypocritical man living next to me. So through the pastime he is showing, actually people would feel that, oh, Gaurkishodas Babaji Maharaj was attached to money, and when he lost money he went and drowned himself. But it was not the case. He was actually trying to show his intolerance for hypocrisy in a person. He said that he is trying to show that he is a devotee and he is serving me, but in the name of serving me he is actually siphoning off my money. And he is giving that money away to some to his own father-in-law, who is also not a pure devotee, who is using it just to earn fill his stomach up. And in the same way, there was another incident where one householder devotee gives a very expensive shawl to Gaurkishodas Babaji Maharaj. And Gaurkishodas Babaji Maharaj profusely praises that householder Vaishnava. That, oh, this is such a nice shawl you have given, and he keeps it very carefully, he looks after it well. And then another householder devotee gives him some few coins, like some rupees he gives him. And again Gaurkishodas Babaji Maharaj carefully ties that money in the cloth, in his outer garment cloth, and every time he is touching there to see if it's safe or no. And there was one materialistic man who had come from Calcutta for his darshan. And when he saw all these things being done by Gaurkishodas Babaji Maharaj, whatever little faith he had, he completely lost that faith. And he went away from there. And then he goes back to Calcutta and he meets Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And he tells Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur that, oh, I have lost my faith in Gaurkishodas Babaji Maharaj. See what he was doing. I was thinking he's such a renowned sadhu, but he was so attached to that shawl which a householder gave him, and he was praising that householder for giving him that material comfort. And plus he was attached to the coins which that another householder had given, because he was continuously touching that coin to find out if it's there or no. And Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur sharply chastises this man with sharp words. Because what this man didn't know, that after he left judging Gaurkishodas Babaji Maharaj from his external actions, Gaurkishodas Babaji Maharaj had actually given away the shawl and money to another Vaishnava who came to visit him. So that is something that this man did not witness. And he did not realize that he was actually not attached to all these things. And then Bhakti Siddhanta Maharaj explains to this man, this materialistic man from Calcutta. He says that you are judging such a pure devotee by his external actions. Such devotees are actually not attached to any sense gratification. Bhakti Siddhanta Maharaj says that usually if you see people, they will praise others who are increasing their sense gratification. And this is the lens you wear when you judge Gaurkishodas Babaji, that, oh, somebody who has given him some material comforts, he is praising. But he said, no, he was only praising the act of a Vaishnava in trying to help another Vaishnava. That is the act he was praising, that how he is trying to serve a Vaishnava nicely. And he explained to him that after you went, he has already given it away. He has not even kept anything for himself. So Bhakti Siddhanta Maharaj was trying to explain that how it is important not to judge any devotees by their external actions. Their external actions may appear contradictory to the normal codes of material life, like we read in today's verse also. That it may appear to be contradictory, but it is better to understand from a devotee how to reconcile these contradictions which were there in Gaurkishodas Babaji Maharaj's behavior. And also, speaking of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the pastime of how he took initiation from Gaurkishodas Babaji Maharaj is also very unique. So Bhakti Vinod Thakur, as we discussed, had great reverence for Gaurkishodas Babaji Maharaj. And realizing the potency of Gaurkishodas Babaji Maharaj, he instructs his son that you must go and take initiation from Gaurkishodas Babaji Maharaj. So Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur approaches him. And the first time he approaches Gaurkishodas Babaji Maharaj, he tells him that, oh, I would like to take initiation from you and serve you for my entire life, surrender my life to you. And Gaurkishodas Babaji Maharaj tells him that I will have to ask Lord Gauranga for this. You come next tomorrow. So then again Bhakti Siddhanta Maharaj goes to him. And the next day Gaurkishodas Babaji Maharaj again tries to dissuade the situation by telling him that, oh, I forgot to ask Lord Gauranga what happened. Like, he has not given me any instructions, I forgot to ask him, so you go away from here. And then again next day Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur goes to him. And that time he says that I asked Lord Gauranga and he said that scholarship and all these good behavior and scholarship are insignificant in trying to surrender to Lord Gauranga. And therefore I cannot accept you as my disciple. And that time Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, he says that you are so much intolerant of deceit and you are trying to deceive me by all these things, by trying to completely dissuade me from taking initiation from you. But he said that just as Ramanujacharya had to travel 17 times to take initiation, and he waited for so many years, He said, I will also wait. I will wait as many times you reject me. I will keep waiting. I will keep approaching you for initiation. But I'm not going to accept initiation from anybody else. And when Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj heard of the determination of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he was very, very pleased by his behavior. And then he blessed him. And then it is mentioned in Bhakti Vinod Thakur's Bhajan Kutir, Svananda Sukhada Kuj, Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj actually initiates Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And because it is the disappearance day today, we will finally conclude with the disappearance pastime of Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj. So he disappeared from this world actually on November 16th, 1915 it is mentioned. And after he disappeared in Kuliagram, and after he disappeared, there were so many local priests and sadhus who gathered around his body. And there was an argument that broke out among them. Because all of them, each one of them wanted to cremate and have Bhakti Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj Samadhi in his own temple. And their purpose was completely insincere. It was not that they were having so much devotion for Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj and they wanted to serve him in separation or they wanted to serve his Samadhi. Their purpose was that if they have the Samadhi in their temple, lots of visitors will come because Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj was so famous. So they knew lots of visitors will come and that way they will make revenue for their temple. That was the whole purpose of them wanting to do this. So they actually were fighting with each other. And that time Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur arrived there. And Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur actually tried to dissuade all of them. And he said that, no, I'm the only one who should be cremating, who should be doing the final rites for Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj. And he had to bring a police inspector with him because there was so much argument happening in that over Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj's body. So then another reason these people started giving was that no, only a sannyasi can actually do the final rites for Gaur Kishordas Babaji. And you are not a sannyasi, therefore you cannot do, only we can do. And that time again Bhakti Siddhanta Maharaj challenges all of them. He tells that I am not a sannyasi but I am a Naishtika Brahmachari. I have never ever discharged my semen nor have I ever thought of any illicit activity or association with a woman. Even in my mind I have never thought about that. So he said, if any of you present over here have never ever thought of any illicit activity, not only thought, if you all have not even done illicit activity in the last 6 months or 3 months, then you all have the right to touch his body and do the final rites for him. And the inspector actually asks that what is the proof? Who will give the proof that they have not done? And Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that I will take their word for it. And because Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was like a lion, he was so fearless. He knew that people would not actually have the audacity to say any lies in front of him. So he just stood there and then one by one slowly all of these sadhus and these so-called sannyasis and babaji started leaving the place. Because not even one of them there was free from the desire for illicit sex with women. And they had committed that abominable activity. So one by one they all left. And then few of them who remained, they started instructing Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur that Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj, before he left this world, it was his desire that his body, after he has left, his body be dragged through the streets of Navadvip so that his body can roll in the dust which is there in Navadvip Dham. And that is the way he wants to get purified before his body is cremated. And Bhakti Siddhanta Maharaj vehemently opposed to this proposition. He said that he was humility personified and therefore he is making such a request because he feels that his body should be smeared by the dust which all Vaishnavas have walked on and that is his consciousness. But he said his body actually is so reverential. It has to be worshipped. How can I allow my spiritual master's body to be dragged like that? And he vehemently opposed and he did not do that. In fact, he lifted the body in his own arms and he took it for final rites. And that is how he did the final rites and Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj Samadhi was established by Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So it's time up. These are some of the pastimes we wanted to discuss about Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj on his disappearance day. And as we said before that when we hear or when we narrate the pastimes of Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj, we mainly pray to him that our heart also becomes free from the anartha of deceit and hypocrisy. And we also get the determination to do a little bit of austerity which he used to do for Lord Krishna. So we'll end here and we'll ask if there are any questions or comments or corrections. mentioned in the beginning of, before we started narrating the pastimes of Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, we mentioned that there are two types of saints. One is the Bhajanandi saints and one is the Goshtiyanandi saints. So Narad Muni actually is the highest example, the topmost example of a Goshtiyanandi saint. So Narad Muni himself is a pure devotee of the Lord, and yet he goes around the world trying to preach the glories of the Lord to anyone who will take his mercy. And plus he is such a dynamic preacher, actually, if you see Narad Muni, that he knows how to preach according to time, place, circumstance, and he knows how to modify depending on what, you know, the candidate will take in terms of the instructions of bhakti. So he knows how, for example, when he approached King Prachina Bharishat, he knew he was steeped in ritualistic sacrifices and he was doing so much of animal killing in the name of sacrifices. So then he preached to him through an allegory of King Puranjana. And then when he preached to, he knew Prahlad Maharaj is a great devotee from the womb. So he just had to preach to Kayadu. And Prahlad Maharaj automatically got the instructions, and he knew just by those instructions he will, you know, from childhood he'll be such a great devotee. And with Dhruva Maharaj he adopted another way, like you said, you know, he tried to first of all dissuade him and test him, and then he gave him the mantra Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. But ultimately he knew that Dhruva Maharaj will become purified and he will be, his fame will spread all over the world as the boy who was so determined in his activities even at such a young age to obtain Krishna. But that is essentially the mood of a Goshtiyanandi saint. But a Bhajanandi saint, as we mentioned, is usually not on that platform. He does not step down from the Uttamadhikari platform to the platform of Madhyamadhikari, which is required to be able to preach. So Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj was not in the mood of preaching at all. But still, if people used to approach him, he used to dissuade them, because that is the mood of a Bhajanandi saint. They always feel that there is nothing they need, they have to instruct. They are so humble. They have intense humility that they don't have anything to preach. They feel they are so fallen that they cannot preach anyone to anyone. So that was one mood of Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj. And the other mood of Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj was that he was extremely intolerant of any insincerity or any deceit he used to see in anyone. So there are many instances even in his pastime. If you read the book written about Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, he actually gave so much mercy. There was lack of time. There was a married couple who came to him. And Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur brings this married man to him. Now, married people means they are actually into so much, you know, there is some license for sense gratification allowed. But it's not that Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj rejected that man. He gave him such nice instructions. He said that you first serve your... Because that man wanted to know, how can I still continue serving Krishna now that I'm married? And he tells them that you actually cook food, offer it to Krishna, and then you serve your wife first and then accept her remnants. And that is how you will be able to come out of that sense of proprietorship which is there in marriage for each other. And you know, the sense of proprietorship which again brings sense gratification, that I can enjoy my spouse for my own sense gratification. So very nice instructions he gives them. But whenever he used to detect insincerity or hypocrisy, he used to stay away from those people. And that was his mood, combined with the fact that he was a Bhajanandi saint who never used to like to preach. So both of these actions used to impel such behavior from him. Any other questions or comments? Okay, we'll stop the class here. Srila Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, disappearance ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.